everybody, and welcome back to Solarte Collections. This is episode 6, and we are in a series about coronavirus and how we can manage well and navigate a new process, both in business, personal lives, and overcoming what seems like a huge mountain, but we are doing it. And we are happy to interview tonight Una O'Neill. She is a doctor of obstetrics and gynecology. We will be talking to her about deliveries right now and also how to help women who might be in a domestic violence situation. And of course, her husband, Jim O'Neill, he is the DA here in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and he's presiding over cases for domestic violence. So sit back and listen to what they have to say, both in the legal matters as well as medical. We look forward to sharing with you. We're so thankful. Dr. Una O'Neill is with us today to talk about her role as an OBGYN doctor at Wake Forest Health. And we are just thankful for strong women like Una who are available to talk to us about the COVID-19 virus and how we are going to navigate this right now in this time. So, Una, tell me, when did you first become aware of COVID-19 and how did your team prepare for this whirlwind?
Yeah, hi, Angela. Thank you for having me. I wanted to also thank you for caring enough to bring issues of domestic violence and intimate partner violence to the forefront. It's not an easy thing to do, and it certainly brings a certain soul to your business and to our community. So on behalf of all of us women, I really thank you for doing that.
Yes.
But to answer your question, so COVID-19, I always think in terms of holidays, and I think around St. Patrick's Day is when this kind of first struck and became a reality for us here in the triad.
Mm-hmm.
And so to prepare for the whirlwind of information that came through, you know, first we had to accept what we didn't know, which
right.
is difficult for medical providers. But once, you know, we learned to accept this, we followed the golden rule of first do no harm.
Mm-hmm.
And so the initial medical response was just stop the spread as much as possible so that we could have an opportunity to get a handle on what we're dealing with. And so, you know, like many other businesses, leaders stepped up and the first order of business was communication.
Yep.
And in our world, that, like many other businesses, meant multiple emails, phone calls, conference calls constantly within a day.
Wow.
Often with changing information within several hours, but we just had to keep up to try and stay on top of this as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And then open up our brains to accepting all that change in such an environment of the unknown.
Yes. So in all of that, I mean, I'm sure the hours are longer than normal. I mean, what are your typical days like? Are they changing all the time? I mean, do you get any days off? I mean, how are you and your team handling the hours?
Yeah, so the workload is definitely different. And, you know, change is always hard.
Mm.
So because of that, that becomes very challenging and more fatiguing. So while I'm physically seeing less patients in the office setting and, you know, performing less surgery, we have increased other types of access via telehealth, and just lots of hours spent in planning, schedule changes, patient phone calls, just all in different ways. That's different for us and also just very time-consuming. But
right.
also, at the same time, at the birth center, we've been busy. Deliveries have been abundant.
I bet.
So it's busy on that front, too.
Okay. So, and in your world, I mean, you're still doing, well, are you doing non-essential exams, or is it all delivery?
We're trying to make any kind of office visit essential only.
Okay.
So that includes any kind of obstetric visit. We're trying to space them out if possible to decrease exposure. But everything obstetrical is still business as usual for the most part.
Gotcha.
It's more the preventative visits and the surgeries that have been put off the most in the OBGYN world.
Okay. And so what type of, I mean, I'm sure there are special protocols at work that have changed, especially in delivery. I mean, can the woman have her husband or partner there? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, so that's very much determined by the community in which you live in. And so here in Forsyth County, the social distancing has worked so effectively that, you know, we are not New York City in that our prevalence is not as high. So
mm-hmm.
right now we are able to have a visitor at the birth center for every delivery, so people can have one visitor for the actual delivery. And I don't anticipate that changing unless we have a severe spike. So that's where we stand right now.
And so right now, they're not. We're not anticipating that. I mean, everybody has been pretty good, I think, about the shelter in place. And it seems like the news has been good on that front.
It has been pleasantly surprising how well this has worked. And we have been in a good place in our healthcare system because of it.
Good. And so when you come home from the office from deliveries, is there a at-home protocol that you follow when you get home to your...
Yeah.
Okay. So what does that look like?
In healthcare with infectious disease prevention, with the hand washing and everything else we do, not much has actually changed because we do that anyway. That's just part of our day. We are just much more deliberate about it. After a long, sweaty shift in the hospital, everybody just wants to come home and kind of shower the day off themselves.
Right.
So that's not anything new, but I am more deliberate. I wear the same shoes to work every day. And when we go to work, in general, working in the hospital, we change at the hospital, wear our scrubs there, and then change out before we leave the hospital. So we try and leave everything there.
Okay.
I do take my shoes off before coming into the house. I do usually just go straight to the shower. Psychologically, there's a benefit to just kind of washing the day off you sometimes as well.
Sure. I mean, I'm sure you're encountering, not all deliveries end well, I'm sure. And my heart goes out to doctors. My grandfather was a thoracic surgeon, and he told us lots of stories. And it's a joyful time for you, I'm sure, on a lot of fronts, but it can also be tough too, right? Not everything goes the way the doctors want it to every day. So, yeah.
That's why the doctors are there. I mean, that's what we're there for.
That's right. All right. Well, then the big question is, how many babies have you delivered since COVID, became a threat? I mean, more than normal, or what are you seeing?
We have an uptick at the birth center. We've been quite busy. So since COVID, we have delivered about 250 babies.
Wow. Okay. And how many doctors are in your practice alone?
With Wake Forest Baptist Health, we have a large pool of doctors, and our delivering doctors range in about the 20-person size.
Okay. So you all are sharing in the deliveries and who's on call when and that sort of thing.
That's correct.
Yeah, good.
We have an attending physician in-house at all times, so those shifts require a large number of people to cover.
Are you finding that some of these mothers are trying to deliver at home because they're afraid of coming to the hospital? Have you seen any of that?
That question has come up. We do not support or recommend this.
Right.
It's a very acute field with surprises that can happen at any time. I mean, there's a reason we don't deliver in the fields anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so, there's just more to it than just getting the baby out. And we really need to focus on healthy mothers so they can also properly care for their newborn. We really want to optimize the delivery outcomes so that mothers can prepare for the postpartum period as well.
Mm-hmm.
So COVID-19 is not dangerous enough to risk maternal health like that.
Well, and I know that that's been very controversial in the state of North Carolina alone. I mean, I don't know anybody that has home delivered, but you do see people that have wanted that. And I don't even know. I mean, is it legal or it's not legal, right? In the state of North Carolina, is it?
Legally, I don't think it would be considered a criminal act, but it's certainly not recommended.
Right.
And the biggest thing that we see is the aftermath of it, and then you have an emergency type situation of rushing a newly delivered mom with a newborn to a hospital, and that is never a fun situation, and you just don't want to set yourself up for that.
We'll leave it to the professionals who know what they're doing, and that's always the best way. So my other question, leading back to our mission in domestic violence, as you know, Solarte cares deeply for women and all families and children who've been subjected to that type of crisis. And so, are you seeing mothers that are coming in for late-term exams that are going through that or talking about it? Or what are you seeing on that front?
For women who feel comfortable speaking about it, I love the fact that they bring it up at their visits and start talking about it now, because expectation is everything. And I want pregnant women to remember that the postpartum time period, it's all about focusing on your sleep, your recovery, your hydration, and of course, feeding that baby.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a natural isolation that occurs with just taking care of a newborn. And I think the biggest difference with COVID-19 is just not having those visitors in your home.
Right.
So that doesn't necessarily have to be viewed as a bad thing. I mean, I think you can make a plan to reach out to people by FaceTime or by telephone on your own time, by your watch. But really, there's not a ton of free time in that immediate postpartum period.
Right.
You know, especially in that first month, you are just surviving yourself. And so, you know, you can have people drop off things, do that window wave, and then kind of get back to yourself and your recovery.
Sure.
I think true postpartum depression is so much more complex than just missing your friends.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I highly recommend to women, if you get to that feeling of just being overwhelmed, you first just reach out to your doctor and really speak about it. This is what we do, and this is what they're for.
Right.
Don't let COVID-19 come between you and your baby. It doesn't need to.
And so then when these women are delivering, you know, have you seen any women in crisis as far as like a spouse or a partner that has been, you know, abusive before the baby comes, or are they afraid after, you know? I mean, I don't know what type of conversations. I'm sure that you ask if they're safe at home and that sort of thing. But I mean, if they aren't, are you helping them make decisions to get into safe places after the baby comes?
Yeah, I mean, at the postpartum period, pregnancy and the postpartum period is always a difficult time, and we do see an increase in the physical violence, but also the emotional manipulation. And I think right now, we're seeing a lot of silent suffering. We have not seen increased ED visits for the quintessential physical abuse. We're not seeing that, but I think the numbers will rise. It will take a matter of time, and it would not be surprising. I mean, I think women just need to know that in whatever way we can help, they can always reach out to us, even if it's just to talk. My favorite resource is the National Domestic Violence Hotline. They have the best resources that they can bring it down to your county. And even if you just want to call the hotline, you know, they're not going to just tell you to go to a shelter. I don't think that's a realistic solution for most of the time.
Right.
The long-standing relationship-type issues and emotional issues that aren't just an easy, let me leave my life. But that domestic violence hotline, 1-800-799-SAFE or 1-800-799-7233, is my favorite resource, where sometimes you just need a safe space to talk, and you have to start there, and they can help with any other next step you want to go to if you're ready for that.
Yeah, that's good advice. And, you know, again, we support about 12 safe houses right now among 7 states. And so we're hearing some positive stories of women who have been able to get out of the situation, but they have to call and they have to ask. And, you know, a lot of times it is hard to leave when you're in isolation, but finding a way to text or get the help that you need is critical.
Yeah, the first step is always making a plan. And there's a lot of stress relief that comes with just going through that process of making a plan.
That's right. Well, on a lighter topic, what do you think, as I'd love to place bets sometimes on this type of thing, I'm in a baby boom in 9 months around Christmas time. Do they think it's going to triple? Or, I mean, what are your thoughts?
Baby boom, maybe, but, you know, there's no better contraception than spending this much time in your own home with kids.
Right.
So I actually predict we break even.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good bet. And then the last question, of course, I have today is, what can you recommend for those stretch marks that we tend to get during pregnancy?
That's one of my favorite questions. So, you know, first of all, stretch marks can often be a postpartum phenomenon. So just because you get to your due date and you don't have any, doesn't mean you're out of the woods. Stretch marks are based on hydration. Everything is about hydration. Now, there's a genetic component to it. You can blame mom, but if you're going to get stretch marks, you're going to get stretch marks.
That's right.
The key is not scratch them.
Oh.
And so moisturization, my favorite is first an oil and then a nice thick shea butter cream on top of that to lock it in.
Good.
Would be my recommendation.
All right. Well, I love that we've been able to catch up today. And Una, you are such a fantastic provider of healthcare in our community. And we're actually honored also to talk to your husband tonight, Jim O'Neill. And so, yes, I know. It's a dynamic duo for sure. So we'll take a quick break and then we'll put Jim on and ask him some questions about his role as the district attorney, which would be great.
Great. Thank you so much. All the best to you.
Thanks, Una. We are talking to Jim O'Neill, Una O'Neill's husband, and he is the district attorney in Forsyth County in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And so he has quite a large responsibility to make sure that the law is handled at the full extent and that we are protected as citizens. So, Jim, tell me, how has this process been through the COVID-19 virus, and how is the state of North Carolina now handling domestic violence cases during the lockdown?
Well, first of all, Angela, let me begin by saying that, you know, we're most grateful for people like you out in the community that support our efforts to battle domestic violence. You know, we describe domestic violence as that dirty secret that sort of takes place behind closed doors, and it crosses all economic stratospheres. It crosses all racial lines. It affects everybody in our community. And like I said, it all happens behind closed doors. So we're most grateful for the spotlight that you help shine on this problem.
Thank you.
So as far as North Carolina, what we're doing in terms of handling our DV cases during this lockdown, you know, we are business as usual. We have not allowed the lockdown to slow us down one bit. Mm-hmm. The district attorney's office here in Forsyth County is continuing to work on a daily basis with victims of domestic violence, especially during this pandemic. There's been no break in service for what our office provides.
Good.
You know, we're here 24/7 for the victims of domestic violence. In fact, people wanting to obtain a domestic violence protective order, what we normally call a 50B, they continue to be heard and can be conducted remotely, as a matter of fact.
Good. Well, it's so important because you just think, you know, a lot of people don't know that I am actually a survivor. I mean, I'm 20 years out, but I didn't have to be isolated with my abuser 20 years ago. I was able to get out. And so it's just so important that you do have those remote cases that you can hear and get those protective orders. So what type of stories have you heard, either from agencies, first responders, about domestic violence lately?
Well, you know, nationally, the risk factors for domestic violence are elevated during this time due to job losses and financial stresses.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's probably important for the public to understand that the stay-at-home orders, like what we have here in North Carolina right now, do not apply to victims needing to flee abuse or find safer places to stay. And I think that's a very important point to get across.
Good. And so, I mean, are there any particular stories where it's as you said, business as usual, but I mean, there have been some circumstances where you've had to act sooner than later for particular cases?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, we've had incidences where we have attempted to reach out and contact victims only to be told by their abuser that they are under a COVID-19 lockdown, which is a complete fabrication.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason that she can't come to the phone and can't talk, because she's sick.
Oh.
So we have encountered problems like that, but we are persistent in trying to locate and find our victims. So law enforcement does a great job of being aggressive and tracking our victims down.
Right. So are there any new recommendations or ideas that haven't been implemented yet that you have right now for just everybody in general who's dealing with this lockdown? And I mean, is there anything that you have that you can implement at this point that's different?
Well, you know, when you talk about domestic violence cases and the courts are down, then our cases are obviously delayed.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with domestic violence cases is that when we suffer any sort of gap between the date of the offense and the court date, victims may try to leave their addresses and find a safer place to live, and unfortunately some don't provide forwarding information.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, as time has gone by, the victims, some of them at least, become reluctant to testify.
Right.
So I think, especially in a time like this during this pandemic, is a time that we need to use as many resources at our fingertips and everything that's available, whether it's prosecution, local law enforcement, a podcast such as yours,
sure.
You know, to continue to build strong network so that we can hold offenders accountable and get the word out to our victims that we support them 100%.
Good. So my last question, and you know, this has been a great interview, and there's always things that we could go into in further detail, but are there any cases from your time as an attorney or a DA that have stuck with you or shaped your thinking?
You know, I'll tell you something. When I first started, I was the first domestic violence prosecutor in our county. That was almost 25 years ago. And, you know, I'll never forget that first month or so that I was assigned to that court. I had been at a Christmas party here in town, and it was hosted by someone who was an executive at one of our local companies. That's as much as I'll say about it. The next morning I came into court, and there was his wife sitting out in the audience, and she had obviously been struck inside of the face and in the eye, and her eye was all swollen. And sure enough, you know, he was there, and he was brought out in handcuffs, and a bond hearing was conducted. And, you know, I think that's when it sort of struck me and made me understand early in my career that domestic violence is something that crosses all economic lines and all racial lines and religious lines, and it's everywhere in our community. And we have to be aggressive about how we combat it, and we have to be super supportive of our victims to let them know that there's people out here that care, and that we want to do everything we can to create a safe and strong environment to help them get physically and emotionally and mentally strong.
Right. And I'm so glad that you're addressing it that way, because, as you said, just it doesn't discriminate. I mean, I was, you know, married to a very charming guy with a great career, and you just never know who's going through it. And I'm glad that you're addressing that. I think the persona of a woman who is barefoot and pregnant and home, and that just isn't always the case. You know, it's
absolutely not. No, and as I said, that was one of the more shocking things that I can recall. You know, it's a matter of hours after you leave somebody's house, and everything seems to be fine, and the next morning, there they are in court, and the wife clearly had been abused, and he was in handcuffs. So it was a real wake-up call.
Well, good. So I'm so excited that you have won your primary. I forgot to even mention that at the beginning of the interview. Going into the elections, it's going to be quite an interesting, you know, outcome this year, but we're proud of what you've done, and we're excited for you. And any plans in the next few months, or any type of legislation that you're trying to bring to the forefront at this point?
Well, I am very excited to have the opportunity to continue to serve people in this community. As a government lawyer, you're not doing it to make millions of dollars every year. You're doing it because you believe you're serving a greater good, and you're serving your neighbors and your community and keeping them safe. And, you know, I think that in Winston-Salem here, we've been rated the safest city in all of North Carolina. And, you know, I think some of the policies and plans that we've put in place here to combat violent crime and combat domestic violence have led us to become the safest city. And it'll be interesting to see if I can prevail in the fall. And if I can, perhaps we make North Carolina the safest state in the nation.
I love that. Well, it's just been great talking to you, and we're proud of you and what you're doing, and we hope that there'll be some positive outcomes this fall, and looking forward to seeing how that plays out. So, Jim, thank you so much for your time this evening, and we'll look forward to seeing you at some point, maybe at a lacrosse game or school. Our children go to school together, so when they can go back to school, that'd be great.
Yep, I think that we've all developed at least a newfound appreciation for what our teachers are going through day in and day out. So. But Angela, thank you again for all the support that you provide victims of domestic violence. And, you know, we wish we had more folks like you out there.
That's great. Well, thanks again, Jim, and we'll be in touch. Have a great evening.
Thank you, Angela. Take care.
Bye-bye.